From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, border counties are seeing a voting shift towards the Republican Party. What's behind this political trend? And an investigation into a Bexar County deputy tasing a migrant teen at a refugee shelter. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In the 2020 election, there was a noticeable political shift along the Texas southern border. Donald Trump performed significantly better than expected. In Zapata County, which is nearly 95% Latino, in 2016, it went for Hillary Clinton by 33 points. In November, Trump won it by 5 points. It was the first time that it voted Republican since 1920. Four other South Texas counties, which are majority Latino, LaSalle, Jim Wells, Kennedy, and Clayburg, also flipped from Clinton to Trump. The city of Laredo, which is in Webb County, had the biggest swing towards Trump of any U.S. metro area. This has caught the eye of the Texas Republican Party. They see their long game paying off, which was to convince Latino voters that they're actually Republican voters and that their multi-generational loyalty to the Democratic Party doesn't fit with their conservative values. The question is, was this a one-off election? Was it the special circumstances of 2020 that created this result? Because COVID crippled the campaigning for the Democratic Party, Trump's large personality, the economic turmoil, and smart GOP campaigning using direct WhatsApp messaging and large Spanish-language ad buys, that the Republicans saw these big gains. But Democrats say they will respond and that they will bounce back. But last week's election of a new mayor of McAllen, Javier Villalobos, a Republican, may indicate that something significant is going on. Also, Joe Biden won Hidalgo County, which includes McAllen, by 17 percentage points. 4 years earlier, Hillary Clinton carried that county by 40 points. Winning border voters is critically important for the Republican Party of Texas. Latinos are expected to become the largest racial demographic group in the state by the end of the year. The GOP has to win more Latino voters to remain in power, and what's happening along the border could be showing us the future of politics in Texas. To help us understand what's happening in the Rio Grande Valley, I'm joined by Natasha Altema McNeely, Professor of Political Science at the University of Texas, Rio Grande Valley.
I think that there's a couple of factors that need to be highlighted, especially in the context of the McAllen city election, but also that these factors are also applicable to some of these results we saw back in November during the 2020 presidential elections and all of the subsequent elections that followed within that period as well. So that being said, the first factor is in the particular context of the McAllen election, we all need to remember that this is a local level election. And why that factor is particularly important is that existing literature examining turnout across all racial groups, across all groups based on their socioeconomic status within political science, has shown that compared to a presidential election, and of course other national level elections that occur in a designated month, so November of a designated year, of the presidential election year, for instance, when you look at these local level elections, they typically are what's called off cycle. So they're not in November when everybody has been socialized to be aware that they have to vote. I think that factor is important to highlight because when you're looking at the election returns for the McAllen elections, especially when you're looking at the actual election day of the runoffs, the election returns aren't that high. So between the two candidates, so Mayor-elect Villalobos and his opponent, Ms. Vela Whitaker, we see that he won just by 200 votes, and he received 4,744 votes, and she received 4,538 votes for a difference of just 206 votes. But when you're looking at the population of McAllen itself, as far back as 2019, the census estimates were that there were approximately 141,000 people living here in the city of McAllen. So that shows that about less than 10% of the electorate cast a ballot for either of these candidates, so to speak.
You say it was a 200 vote difference in a very low turnout race. But people are kind of seeing this as another example of how Republicans are making gains. We're seeing a lot of attention being paid to the border by the Texas Republican Party. They are saying they're going to make the investments down in the valley and in Laredo and those areas in order to shore up and make a difference. And people are wondering if there is a surge in Republican voting in these areas in the border because of Trump, if people, especially male Latino voters, if there is a rejection of some of the policies and rhetoric that comes from the National Democratic Party, phrases like Latinx, defund the police, and also Black Lives Matter, and that could be a factor. So any response to that?
I think those are valid factors for people to consider. And what I would say is that, yes, the phrase defund the police and the lack of understanding around what it actually means. So when people take, if and when people just take it at face value, right? They just see defund the police. That hits a nerve here in the Valley because we do have a large Border Patrol, Customs and Border Patrol presence. We, law enforcement in general, whether it's the CBP or local police departments, are viewed as being very valuable. Those are very, very highly sought after professions here in the Valley. To see the phrase, for people who find that phrase problematic, they feel that there's an attack on these institutions. The Black Lives Matter, when some people see this phrase, there's a misunderstanding of what Black Lives Matter, the movement, intends to do. And there's a lack of understanding and a lack of realization that Black Lives Matter is actually beneficial to all minoritized groups. Or in other words, it's not just for the Black population.
Yeah, but you hear sometimes the reaction is, what about Brown Lives Matter?
There's a lack of realization and understanding that Black Lives Matter as a social movement, at the heart of it is, yes, trying to emphasize that Black lives do in fact matter. But when they're through the pursuit of that realization, there's efforts to actually benefit all racially minoritized groups. So that actually encompasses Hispanics and those who identify as Latino, Latina, Asian Americans, right? So there's this unfortunate assumption that Black Lives Matter is exclusionary, or then they take it to the next level and say that it's racist without actually understanding what the movement is about.
Teal Bernie is something that people talk about in appealing to younger Latinx, Latino voters. Senator Bernie Sanders and his platforms of tuition-free education or student loan forgiveness and greater access to health care. These are issues that seem to have broad appeal to Latino voters. Is that where the battle lines are drawn? Is it between Bernie Sanders' social democratic point of view and Republican?
So when we look at how well, or when we look at how Bernie Sanders did among the electorate here in the Valley, we do see that he did fairly well among the young people who identified as Democrats and or progressives, because there are some progressives who don't identify as Democrat. They would identify themselves as independents, much like the senator himself. I think that that would be more geared towards how, if that's a battle line between, when you're looking at young people, right? Because as I said before, we do see that younger generations here in the Valley are moving towards the extremes, both on the left and the right. So I think if you're looking at, if you're just focusing on the young T.O. Burney, as you said, made quite the impression down here in the valley, and there, and it's a lasting impact. And why I say that is this, because we did see that, I believe, in 2018, I believe Jessica Cisneros attempted to primary current representative Cuellar, and she was very progressive, right? And a lot of the a lot of Bernie Sanders positions were adopted by Jessica Cuellar. And then the last election cycle in November, we saw Sarah Stapleton Barreda running against Eddie Lucio at the state level. So she's trying to unseat State Representative Lucio. And she also was fairly progressive and adopted some of Bernie Sanders' positions. And both of these candidates made quite a lot of progress among the young.
We saw on Thursday that Governor Greg Abbott announced that the state of Texas is going to be finishing the border wall. He also announced that the DPS troopers are going to be allowed to enforce immigration law, and that he's going to bring in extra law enforcement. Is this play in a particular way on the border with conservative voters who want to, who would be supporting the Democratic Party? It does seem like a political calculation that Greg Abbott is making, and I'm just trying to see what does his calculus look like?
Well, I think it's important to remember that politicians want to get reelected. Governor Abbott, at the end of the day, is a politician from the Republican Party, and he's thinking about, so you use the phrase political calculus. His political calculus, his strategies, if you will, is to do what will make his constituents happy. And he is, as you said, he's trying to appeal to the potential conservative voters here in the Valley, and the way to, and then also throughout Texas, because the governor's constituency is the entire state of Texas.
And also to a potential national voter as well, as he,
considering
the presidential run.
Depending on what he wants to do. Right. So there's been speculation that he would like to run for president. I can't speak to that. I've only seen it as speculation, but he is going to be up for re-election as governor quite soon. And so he is trying to, he is trying to solidify his base of support who find immigration problematic, both illegal and legal immigration problematic. And he's trying to pick up as many votes among potential conservative voters here in the Valley. And it's an effective strategy, because not only will it solidify the support he already has, he'll pick up some votes, but at the same time, he's going to continue to alienate members of the constituency who don't support his actions. But at the end of the day, again, every politician, regardless of their partisanship, regardless of which party they're from, they want to get reelected. So this is what he's trying to do.
In the Valley, how does this play? Does this play, will this build up the GOP down there, or will this slow the growth?
I think it'll build the GOP here, in the sense of those who share similar positions on contentious issues like immigration, for instance, which is what these actions that you highlighted are related to. But it'll also alienate members of the constituency who, although may identify as conservative, but maybe have a different point of view on immigration. And of course, it'll continue to alienate those who don't identify as Republican.
You teach at the university in the Rio Grande Valley, and you have college students coming into the classroom, although we've been remote. But you do get an opportunity to sample and talk to and get an idea of where these students are coming from. And do you get an idea from them that there is a growth in support for conservative causes in the Valley?
Yes, I've seen. So it was with the help of my students through some of the assignments in my legislative process class, which focuses on the United States Congress and how laws are made, that I first came to the realization that people identify as Democrats, but many times we see that even if they identify as Democrats, they actually are very conservative. And one thing I didn't get to highlight earlier that relates to this question as well is that the influence of religion here in the Valley is quite strong. And again, that's applicable to the national Hispanic and Latina population as well, because many are Catholic, and then there's also a strong influence of Protestant, in particular evangelical religious beliefs. And I think that's important to highlight, not only as it relates to the students, but to people broadly here in the Valley, because their religious beliefs also influence their political attitudes and which parties they choose to align with. I feel that there could be a growth in conservative students, but in my experience, I feel that maybe the existing conservative students are just feeling more comfortable sharing their perspectives as well.
Natasha Altema McNeely, PhD, is a professor of political science at the University of Texas, Rio Grande Valley. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. An investigation has been launched after a newly released body camera footage shows a Bexar County deputy tasing a migrant teen at a refugee shelter in San Antonio. Here is the audio of that May 12th tasing. Be advised, this can be disturbing to listen to.
Loco, váyanse a la pija, yo no sé con ningún hijo de puta, loco.
Para asegurar tu protección.
Váyanse a la verga, loco. Váyanse a la pija, loco.
Tuvimos mucho tiempo
tratando. Papel que me toque, su puta, me vale verga, que me golpee.
Te va a tocar. Estamos asegurando que tú te calmes.
Alright. Ready? I'm gonna tase
his head.
Turn around.
Turn around now.
The body cam video was obtained by the nonprofit Center for Investigative Reporting using the Texas State Open Records Law. For more, we're joined by one of the reporters on the story, Laura Morel, with the Center for Investigative Reporting.
The body cam footage that we obtained shows a deputy from the Bexar County Sheriff's Office responding to a Southwest Key shelter in San Antonio, Texas. And upon his arrival, shelter staff tell him that a 16-year-old boy had been acting out, had damaged some bed frames and some plastic storage bins. That he didn't want to go to class that day. So the deputy is escorted into the shelter and arrives outside of a bathroom. The child is in the bathroom by himself. He's not hurting anyone. He's, you know, keeping to himself and just doesn't want to be touched. Eventually, 7 minutes later, we see that a second deputy arrives. And it's at that point that the deputy in question, his name is Patrick Divers, says that he's going to tase this kid. So it moves forward and he tases the child for about 35 seconds. The video later shows the child being escorted to a police car, and we know that he was arrested on a charge of criminal mischief.
Tasing the child, hits him with the prong tasers and then with the contact taser as well, multiple tases.
Yes, for about 35 seconds, the child is tased, and then we see that he uses the taser to continue to pulse the child's torso and thighs about 7 times.
So the issue in this story seems to be that these refugee shelters for children who have come up from Central America, who are being held by the refugee resettlement part of the U.S. government, that they were leaning on local law enforcement to deal with children who have behavioral issues. Is that it?
Right. So about a year ago, we obtained federal records through a lawsuit. And these records indicated, essentially provided us with information on thousands of children that had been entered into the Office of Refugee Resettlement shelter system. And so through these records, we were able to identify at least 84 children from ages 11 to 17 that were discharged to local law enforcement. We were able to obtain police and court records for 19 of these cases through public records requests with police departments and DA's offices. And what the documents show is that many of the children were turned over for arrest after they had allegedly gotten into fights, damaged property, such was the case in the tasering incident that I just described to you, or had mental health challenges. Most of the children were processed for misdemeanors, and at least 10 of the youth were charged as adults.
What is the significance of someone seeking refugee status if they have to deal with those criminal charges?
Right. So we spoke to some sources that said, you know, of course, having any sort of criminal record could have an impact on a child's chances of, you know, remaining in the U.S. and seeking asylum or trying to obtain a visa that's for children in that situation. So it could definitely have an impact for sure.
So this individual, this child, young man who has been tased in this video, what do we know about him? What can you tell me?
He, at the time of the tasering, he was 16 years old. He's from Honduras, and his grandmother told us that he actually fled home after he was threatened by a local gang. He came to the U.S. to seek asylum, as, you know, many other children do, that, you know, leave their homes behind for very legitimate reasons. He was 15 years old when he came to the United States. We know that he was shuffled between several shelters between California, Texas, and Virginia. He's actually spent his last two birthdays in ORR custody, and he was only at the Southwest Key shelter in Texas where the tasering happened. He had only been there a week when shelter staff called the sheriff's office that day. We know that he is now back in Virginia. He was sent to a facility called the Shenandoah Valley Juvenile Center. And in the nearly 2 years that he's been in U.S. custody, ORR has moved him into 10 placements across four states. He turns 18 in September, at which point he would be turned over to Immigration and Customs Enforcement for adult detention.
So it helps to understand that these children, when they've made the trip from Central America through Mexico, crossing the border, then being apprehended and then put into this shelter system, how that could impact them. You're 16 years old. You've been going through this for over a year, almost two, and you may have a bad day, and that could be met with being tased, and then also any hope of ever getting asylum in the United States is basically now not going to happen. Is that a reasonable assessment?
Yes, there's so much trauma that these children face. You know, they face trauma back home, which is the, you know, an initial reason as to why they're leaving home in the first place, the only home that they know. You know, there's trauma on their way to the border, traveling by themselves, you know, facing danger. Then there's the trauma of getting to the United States, you know, hoping that they're going to seek refuge, that they're going to be safe, and then encountering this shelter system that, you know, we know through federal records we've obtained, where children are often, you know, shuffled between shelters for prolonged periods of time. And then, you know, in the case of this child and in the other children who we now know were arrested, you know, now you have this additional confrontation, you know, with law enforcement of, you know, being somebody who's here seeking asylum. And then all of a sudden, the agency that's caring for you, transferring you over to local police and putting you in that situation. So, yes, there, you know, there is a lot of trauma that's embedded in these kinds of situations.
So what would an expert on use of force have to say about this exchange and the tasing of the 16-year-old?
So we reached out to the Bexar County Sheriff's Office to speak with the sheriff about the footage and just have a conversation about what it shows. And they have since initiated an internal affairs investigation into what happened. We also learned yesterday that the deputy in question has been placed on administrative leave pending the investigation. We were able to also look at the department's use of force policy. And what that tells us is that generally use of force is not justified in response to, quote, verbal provocation alone. It also says that a deputy, before determining the need for force, there are other steps that they would have to take. First, you know, being verbal persuasion, followed by a physical hold, and then it would be the deployment of a taser, followed by, you know, potentially employing deadly force. So those are the steps in which, you know, according to this policy, a deputy must take when they're, you know, confronted with, you know, some sort of situation while on the job. So that's what we know from the policy. We're waiting to see what the internal affairs investigation is going to show.
The Bexar County Sheriff's Office told you that they didn't know that this tasing had actually happened. Is there any kind of policy that requires a deputy to report when they administer a tasing to a human being? There's no sort of report that needs to be filled out?
There is a report that needs to be filled out whenever a deputy deploys their taser. That's a report that we're actually in the process of trying to obtain as well. So that's what we know, you know, on that front. And, you know, we're, you know, going to keep an eye out on this internal affairs investigation to see what it shows.
You obtained this video through a Freedom of Information Act request. And now they told you, sorry, it was a mistake. We want you to destroy the video. What happened?
Yes. So the Bexar County Sheriff's Office, Sergeant Abraham, reached out to my colleague who worked on the story with me, Aura Bogado, and told us that the video was released in error, that the child is a juvenile, and they requested that we destroy the video. We chose not to destroy the video because as journalists, you know, we believe that there's a strong public interest here. And we also spoke with the child's grandmother, who said that she wanted the general public to see, you know, what happened to her grandson and also understand what could, you know, potentially happen to a child when they're in U.S. custody.
So many people do not understand. They don't know. It's hard to fathom what's going on in these shelters. What do you want them to know?
Well, I think it's important when we're talking about you know, the ORR shelter system to understand that it's vast, you know, it spans across the country. There are about 100 privately run shelters. And it's also subject to this court decree that was filed back in 1997. And it was crafted in response to a lawsuit that was representing children that were fleeing violence in El Salvador back in the 1980s. And basically what this court decree does, and it's called the Flores Settlement Agreement, is it established guidelines through which shelters and ORR itself have to abide by in order to ensure that the children are treated well, that they have access to, you know, counseling, to legal services, that they are released, quote, without unnecessary delay. And one thing that my colleague Aura Bogado published, she published an investigation about a year ago that found that many children were being detained for prolonged periods of time. In fact, she focused in on the case of one girl that had been in these shelters for 6 years, and she was ultimately deported recently back to Honduras.
Laura C. Morrell is a reporter with the Center for Investigative Reporting. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You could also write directly to our show page on our website at tpr.org. That's where you can find past episodes of Texas Matters, and you can find us wherever you download your podcast. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas.